son. Well, how you been, my darling young one? I stepped out in the middle of Sylvan Sat Forest. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans.
Welcome back to the Eco Talk program. Like fish, got fish? Well, as the Pacific wild salmon season gets underway, consumers who cherish the prized fish are being urged by chefs and environmental groups across the country to show support for their favorite by eating more of it. A national campaign led by renowned chef Alice Waters of Chez Panisse in Berkeley, California, and backed by some 200 chefs nationwide, calling on Congress to protect Pacific wild salmon habitats. A letter signed by the chefs will be presented to legislators at an event in Washington, D.C. next week. One of those chefs is joining us now. He is Greg Higgins. He is the chef and owner of Higgins Restaurant and Bar in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to EcoTalk.
Thanks.
This
Good
is
to be here.
Kind of unusual. Is this really what you're saying? We need to create more demand to better protect wild salmon?
Yeah, and it may sound a little bit oxymoronic or a little convoluted, but we need to expand people's consciousness of the value that those fish should be praised at in our society. And right now, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding surrounding it. So we're trying to help clear some of that up and bring to light some things that people may not know about wild fish.
So there is plenty of wild salmon out there in the sea.
There is. I think there's perhaps a misconception that a lot of people know that there's a lot of farm-raised fish as well as wild fish, and that they sometimes think that's a better alternative. But the truth is that the pressures that wild salmon is experiencing is not from overfishing. It's from other issues, and we want them to be aware of that. And most importantly, the people who are making the legislation and practices that the government enacts to be aware of that as well, to make better choices.
So what are those other issues?
Well, habitat's probably the primary one. Water quality, I liken it to the canary in the coal mine. And if we take good care of our watersheds, we'll have good, healthy salmon populations. And if we don't, we won't. And, we could fall back on the idea we'll just eat farm-raised salmon, but it won't address the issue that we're not taking care of our watersheds and the systems, the river systems that we live in.
And what is wrong with farm-raised salmon?
Well, farm-raised salmon has several issues, but it's often done in conflict with wild populations. There's a lot of pollution. There's a lot of drugs and antibiotics involved in the feeding of those fish, as well as other chemicals. So it's a water quality issue, as well as a conflict with the native migration routes of these wild fish, and that's a concern. And certainly we feel that the wild fish should be given priority there, and we should be doing everything we can to promote and restore their habitat so that they're viable populations rather than just relying on sort of open net pen salmon farming.
So is it safe to say that wild salmon is healthier for humans than farmed salmon because it is usually a little bit more money?
It certainly is, and then you can go on different websites. The USDA has some analysis of protein contents and things like that for different foods. But from a chef's perspective, it is absolutely far superior in taste and texture and quality. There's no colorants, there's no dyes, there's no antibiotics, fungicides, herbicides, all those other items that can be used in the production of the farm-raised fish don't have a place in the wild fish. And for that reason, and also those of environmental issues of those coastal water areas being followed by those productions, we've tried to upsell and try to promote the concept that the wild fish is the real deal, and you're paying the full price. You're paying the fishermen and the communities that survive on those things when you buy wild fish.
And what is the real color of salmon?
Well,
let's get down to the nitty-gritty. I've always wondered about that.
You know, the farm-raised fish can be dyed a number of different colors. It's actually put in the food, so it looks good under the lights of the supermarket. But there are five major species of wild salmon, and each one has a slightly different hue depending upon what it's been eating. There is even a what we call ivory salmon, a species that doesn't process the keratin in the food, and that comes out kind of a pale pinkish color. And then pale pink ivory color. And then, of course, the king salmon, the Chinook, has got a deep, pungent color. And sockeye is the deepest color of the fish. It's a deep red, but it's a smaller species of fish and slightly firmer flesh.
Now, is a darker pink healthier? Is that a better quality of fish, or is it just
not
a matter of preference?
I think the stuff that most people search for and are marketed toward them is the idea of high omega fatty acids, high omega-3 fatty acids in there. And that's an issue of what the fish's diet is composed of. And the fish will eat different things. They eat a lot of krill, which is sort of a small shrimp-like crustacean. They eat herring at times. They eat anchovies, things like that. So depending on what they're eating, the texture and the flavor of the fish will vary a bit.
So are you saying farm-raised fish are routinely dyed to make them look pinker? Is that the norm?
Yeah, standard practice. If there weren't dye present, the fish would be kind of a pale gray color because they don't get enough of the keratin in their food naturally to give them that coloration.
And is that perfectly safe, even if it is kind of distasteful to think about it?
There's quite a controversy about whether or not the dye has been linked to an issue relating to problems with vision and whatnot in large quantities. In fact, there have been warnings issued not to eat more than a portion of that fish a week, where there's no such thing for wild salmon. So.
Okay, so a school of chefs is going to be descending on Washington. How unusual is that?
Well, I don't know. I hope they're ready for us. And this time we're not actually cooking. We're going to be just visiting with our politicians and some of the policymakers there and hopefully be able to have some good discussion about what are the appropriate steps to take in ensuring better habitat and watershed conditions for the fish.
As a professional chef and restaurant owner, is this the first time you've become this politically active?
No, you know, I've been on the board for a group called the Chefs Collaborative for years, and that group is focused on the origin of our food products and ensuring that they're coming from good sources and that those things will be available for future generations, for our children and other the diners that are further down the road that we may not be cooking for.
What's happening with some of the other popular fish that were endangered? I know orange roughy used to be one of my favorites till I learned too much. What's happening with that species?
You know, in general, the world's fisheries are under extreme pressure. People are eating more fish than they ever have before at any single time. Our methods of locating those fish and capturing those fish are so vastly improved over what they've been historically that we're just too good at catching fish. And now that will occur. You've heard it with, of course, the Chilean sea bass or the Patagonian toothfish, which is its true name. Orange roughy is a good example, and many others that are just not managed correctly. So what we need to do is manage those fisheries more appropriately. And people can log on to good sites like Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch program. Audubon has a site as well, Living Oceans, that you can go on and see what they recommend as good choices in fish to be putting on your plate. And increasingly, there are national food chains, you know, natural food chains that are very cognizant of it and display some of that information. And you can get lists of restaurants as well as shops that will help steer you in the right direction so you make better choices.
And remind me what the deal is with swordfish. I've been avoiding it, but I honestly can't remember if that's because of the higher mercury content or there is some endangered issue.
Well, there's a combination of factors there. The populations have rebounded since the boycott of a number of years ago on the East Coast. But those predatorial fish, the fish that are eating off the very top of the food chain and live for long periods of time, do have the ability to accumulate different toxins in their system. And so mercury, of course, is one of them. And the same deal with that. You can go onto those sites like Monterey Bay Aquarium, and they'll advise you as to which species are safer for you from an individual health standpoint than others.
Will you actually be testifying next week?
I certainly will. We'll be chatting and talking about all these issues. What we'd like to see them do is pass a couple pieces of legislation that will ensure a higher priority given to the needs of the fish, especially those that are most endangered, and then in general improve the considerations for everything from road building to whether or not we want to consider removing some dams and how much water is spilled and all these different issues. It's a complex topic.
Do you expect much opposition?
Well, hopefully we'll win them over with some good food and work from there. But it's really a win-win situation. We have to invest into the thing to see the benefits further down the road.
Right. You might want to throw in some Chardonnay with that fish. That'll help.
We'll bring some Pinot Gris from
Oregon. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Chef Greg Higgins. We'll be back right after these messages.